If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? It's the Hammer from the Rugby Rant Podcast Show. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody that showed up to Reggie's last weekend when the Irish and the New Zealand All Blacks played here in Chicago. I think everybody that showed up had an awesome time. And our next guest was on. Well, he was in the house, but for a very different reason. One of his best mates will be taking his nuptials very soon. And so Malcolm May was in town to celebrate with the fellas, to wish Rosh Depperschmidt all the best as he moves into a new phase of his personal life. But I want to welcome the very man that I'm talking about that's here on the show. And I've asked Malcolm to come on. We've asked Malcolm to come on to talk about the recent developments in the talks with the NOLA Gold ownership. So let me first thank Malcolm May for joining the show. So Malcolm, thank you for joining the Rugby Rant Podcast Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Rob. And once again, congrats to Ross and Grace. Big wedding this weekend.
So it's this weekend.
The wedding is this weekend, this Saturday.
Nice. In New Orleans, I assume.
Yes, sir.
Nice. And I assume, you know, yourself and a lot of the lads will be down in New Orleans enjoying and revelry, celebrating Roscoe's wedding nuptials. Yeah. All right. Yeah. That's cool. Awesome. Awesome to hear. Again, congratulations, Roscoe. Love you, my man. And again, you're my second favorite Schmidt that plays rugby out there in, the men's club, professional rugby. All right. Anyway, moving forward, like I said, thank you very much, Malcolm May, for joining us. For those that don't know, Malcolm May has his roots here in Chicago, so he's a hometown lad. It's one of the guys. There are a lot of guys in the league that have a special place in Hammer's heart, and this is one of them. And it goes all the way back. Malcolm's younger brother, Nick, and my son, Preston, played together here at the Illinois Tornadoes. Carry on very well. And I've always followed Malcolm's career, of course, watching him with the Gold. So for those that don't know, he played at Penn State. I think when you were at Penn State, you guys were in the national semifinals of D1A, right?
Yeah, I think we beat BYU, and I think we lost a few times to Life and or Cal a few years. But yeah, pretty good side. Oh, that is April. Uh-oh. My cat.
You got a visitor.
Yeah, she's gone. She's gone.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was that year that had the funky, they realigned after the quarterfinals going to semifinals. They like D1A realigned the finals for geographic reasons, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it ended up in, maybe it was Lindenwood or some other team had to go to the West Coast, maybe three games in a row or something.
Yeah, it was crazy. But I do remember that year. So after playing for Penn State and having a great career there, you signed as a free agent with the NOLA Gold, and you played for them for seven seasons from 2019, your first year with the Gold, it's a second season in MLR history, all the way up to this last season in 2025. So for those that don't know, this is a longstanding, pretty close to an OG as you can get with the NOLA Gold.
Yeah. Long time. Been here a long time.
Right. And we can't forget what you're doing most recently for a local club team. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're up to?
I'm helping coach the Crew. There's a rugby competition in New Orleans called the Markel Cup. after Robert Markell, a big rugby old boy here. And yeah, a few of the gold guys help coach out certain teams. Like I coach the Crew. Matt Harmon coaches the Blues. George Sharp helps the Po' Boys in RFC. But yeah, just coach up the boys, give back where I can.
Absolutely. And I love to see the Crew have success, because my man Dan Falcon is really a mover and a shaker, and really, yeah, he makes things happen in that club. And that dude's always closing deals, man. The league needs to hire him to close deals and get some sponsorship. Cause I'm always seeing stuff for Rob's, you know, heating and cooling. And what's the big donut shop you guys are sponsored by?
I know you're putting me on the spot here, but I know which one you're talking about. Dan's good. Dan's a good man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so yeah, Malcolm is coaching the Crew. Love those guys, and love that Markell Cup. It's one of the great parts about club rugby, is just that local championship, you know, that every year it's going to be a dogfight. And the Crew were killing it for a couple of years, and now some teams have stepped up and really made it a phenomenal men's club competition. It's great to see.
Yeah, we got a big playoff game against Baton Rouge Saturday. We just defeated, I think, the Yotes, the newer team in the Markell Cup. I think Chase Jones coaches them. But a big playoff game this weekend. If you live in New Orleans, come out, support.
100%. Where's that going to be at, Malcolm?
That one will be in Baton Rouge before the LSU game. So you can hit both.
Nice. Well, that's a party, bro. That is a party. Looking forward to that. And by the way, speaking of this weekend, a lot of great things happening here in the Midwest, here in Chicago, not far from Malcolm's, the place he calls home, pretty close to the South Side, in Lamont Rugby Clubs. The Midwest Rugby Championships will be happening. A lot of D3, D2, D1 men and women's. And of course, you know, the Premier Division, the D1 men's, it's the Bombers versus the Lions. That's going to be an absolute Donnybrook. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be on the scene, of course, because, you know, when you have kids that play rugby, it's always fun to see them have more success than you did as a player. So I'm looking forward to this weekend. But nevertheless, let's talk about why we are here. I've invited Malcolm May to join us. He's making the rounds because, for those that don't know, there's a bit of, I think it's become a little bit of a battle that is on the border of a legal battle involving contracted pay that's owed to the no-go players that were contracted for two seasons. Malcolm is one of those players, and he's, you know, working with the union. So we're going to talk about that element. And as we get into it, folks, just so you know, I'm going to kind of talk about some events and dates as a way of setting up some questions, but also to help you as a viewer understand kind of the timeline of what's been going on with the NOLA Gold, what happened in the off season all the way up to today. And I do want to not forewarn you, but at least let you know that, you know, in some cases, Malcolm may not be able to answer all the questions because some of those questions are left up for the union to address. Obviously, if there's something that he can't answer, it's because, you know, he's leaving it up to the union and having the union work towards resolution. So first off, Malcolm, let's just open it up. You played for the NOLA Gold for seven seasons, as you mentioned, from 2019 to 2025. I want to talk about this. How were you treated as a player when Tim Falcon was the majority owner and CEO?
Man, I mean, I would honestly say like family. Honestly, it was a big family environment. Like, I obviously, like, I was a little homesick, like, didn't go back to Chicago when I was at Penn State, didn't get a lot of chance to go back when I just got here, but, like, I never felt alone. Like, I felt supported by the community. Dan, Sheila, Tim, like, they all, like, it felt like they took the players in. Like, it was a big family environment. The boys were well taken care of.
100%. It's kind of funny because for those that don't know, Doc Irae, longstanding member of the Gold. I mean, he's like not only looks like a physical rock, but he's a rock in that rugby community. But Doc, when he, even when he was, you know, still in the service, when he'd come back to New Orleans, his first stop was literally at Dan and Sheila Falcons. I've witnessed it firsthand. And that's the kind of family environment that Malcolm's talking about. I still think Junior Tungawea, Moni's brother, calls Sheila Aunt Sheila, which is cool, you know? So, yeah, it's awesome to see. So again, for folks that don't know, let me fill in some gaps. In early 2024, in the early spring, almost, you know, coming out of winter, Tim Falcon, the majority owner, was looking to sell, sell shares and raise capital for the NOLA Gold. And I think a big part of that was, you know, keeping up with the big boys in the MLR was kind of, was a challenge financially. Tim is a very successful attorney, but you know, with the likes of Adam Gilchrist and some of the other individuals coming into the league, it was pretty tough to keep up. So Tim sold his majority share to Intervalley LLC. And again, this was seen as a lifeline for the Gold financially. So Malcolm, how would you describe the interactions with members of Intervalley and the French ownership that took over the majority shares of the NOLA Gold?
I would say, like, obviously, like, whenever a team's going through financial troubles, you're thankful to get that lifeline. But, I mean, on a personal level, it's a bit disconnected from the players and even the staff they employed. Just very and you can kind of tell when someone cares about what's going on and like what you're doing, and when it's about, you know, dollar bills or dollar signs. But I'd say a bit disconnected.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I know we'll talk about it in a couple of minutes, but I know one of the things when I talked with Ryan Fitz that, you know, and every time I'd call him or reach out, the man was, you know, on the way to airport to pick up a player or going to pick up some furniture or help, you know, a guy set up and get themselves situated or moved in so that they could feel more comfortable in the city. And I think that really captivates what you're talking about under you know, kind of the original ownership regime.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like, I do understand the players. It is a business, but, you know, it's that sort of culture stuff that Fitz did that builds teams and builds cultures and keeps teams tight.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that did shift and change, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but one of the things I noticed is, you know, from that zoomed out position that I am here in Chicago, the marketing seemed to get a huge boost after Intervalley moved in. I mean, it seemed like you guys were doing a lot of photo sessions, a lot of video sessions. There was a lot of great social media that was coming out of New Orleans once Intervalley stepped in. Did the boys feel a shift in operations under this new ownership?
I would say, yeah. I'd say the media staff and like the sales team definitely upped their game a bit. Yeah. No, it felt like they were trying to make us more professional, and I think they did a decent job at that. I think Briley, Rochelle, like they were two. Briley was there for a while. Rochelle's a new hire, but I think they did their jobs really well this year.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely showed from all those people who are fans who are watching from afar. So for those that don't know, there was a restructuring of the administration in May of 2024 and the Gold's first ever playoff appearance in June. But not too long after that, the Gold reassigned GM Ryan Fitzgerald to be the community relations officer. I'm curious, did this move have an impact on the players and on the organization?
I mean, I think it's tough. Like, I know there's a lot of guys in this locker room who Fitz brought here, like me being one of them. I think the new ownership kind of got the sense that if Fitz was not a part of this, a lot of other guys would not buy in, like myself included. If Fitz would have been gone at any point, I probably would have tried to go as well. So I think the fact that they at least got him a different job and he was here still supporting the boys kept a lot of boys from, you know, getting too up in arms about it. But there definitely was a shift in how things were run.
Yeah. And it seems like there was a palpable sense of something else in the works at that time too, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Okay. So a comprehensive review was announced on June 10th, right at the conclusion of the season. That was in 2025. And this was kind of the first sign for many fans that showed concern. And I'll put up an image here for folks that had not seen this. But CEO Alex Momont raised eyebrows when he said, and I'll put it up here. He talked about some of the achievements that the NOLA Gold made. It's here. NOLA Gold Rugby extends its heartfelt thanks to everyone who stood by us throughout the year, to our partners, fans, players, coach, staff, and volunteers. Your unwavering dedication, effort, resilience has been the backbone of the club, and we are grateful to the broader rugby community across New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Okay, so he talks about presented challenges and things of that nature, but this goes on. And he says here at the top, meanwhile, our long-term vision for permanent home for the NOLA Gold continues to advance, and we look forward to sharing significant updates soon. So I guess my question for you, Malcolm, is collectively, what were the conversations happening amongst the lads and the team when this news broke of, you know, the long-term vision, the permanent home, thanking fans, all that stuff? Because, and sorry fans, but you know, as I read this, and as some other fans, especially NOLA fans living in New Orleans, read this, one commenter said, looks like it's the end of the road. So is that what were the lads saying in the locker room?
I think at that point, like, you got to think we were one of the long-standing teams. Like, we've heard murmurs before, and at that point we still, like, that's something that we would just kind of brush off. Like, we had heard murmurs that we were moving stadiums. So in our minds, that's all we kind of thought it was. Like, oh, we're moving stadiums. It's not really something we necessarily got worried about or paid too much attention to when that message went out.
Yeah, and for fans that don't know, that was a reality. I think the lease at the gold mine has expired. I think for a lot of reasons, the management, the ownership, including Tim Falcon, had some concerns about staying there. And they were looking at, for example, Tad Gormley, but Gormley was going to present its own challenges, at least in the short term. So for a lot of fans who were there, and Dan Falcon is, and Sheila Falcon are one of them, and for players, this was more of a sign of there's going to be some shift and some changes, but it wasn't a big worry at the time. That pretty much accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. So, all right. So ultimately then we get to kind of where this conversation is really heating up, if you will. Here's the statement. On July 31st, the Gold released a statement saying that the NOLA Gold informed the league that we do not intend to participate in the 2026 season. Discussions are ongoing with the league regarding future opportunities and potential pathway forward. So had the ownership contacted players prior to the breaking of that news piece that we see here?
Yes, I believe we had actually 10-minute Zoom meeting, like a few days before. And then before that, we got a WhatsApp, check your email. There's a Zoom meeting tomorrow morning. Be there if you can.
Okay. Can you talk at all about those meetings or what was involved there?
It was all the boys who were signed on to next year. None of the boys who were like, this was the last year in their contract, they were going to try to sign for next year. It was only the guys who were signed for the 2026 season invited to the Zoom. And then it was Nicola, the GM, and then Alex Momont, the president, who essentially just 5-10 minutes, hey, this is pretty much done. You'll get a severance offer in the mail or in your email.
Okay, so for example, fans, like a guy like Cam Dolan, who had announced his retirement, he wouldn't have been in there for obvious reasons. He's retiring. He wasn't contracted for 2026. But for players like yourself, players like Ross Depperschmidt, players like Callum Bachar, those are the guys that were contracted for 2026 and were in on that Zoom call. So I've got to ask at this point, Malcolm, at what point did the players receive a compensation offer from the new ownership?
I think so. So how it went was, so during our contracts, there's obviously this past season, the 2025 season. Some guys' contracts start and end in December, some a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. So at this point, we were kind of concerned if we're going to be paid out for this year, like paid like what we have already played and done all the games, like paid what we wrote for this year. So gotcha. That was up in the air for like a week or so, but they did that. And then we got a severance offer for those who are contracted for next year. That came, I think, like the next day after we folded. It was essentially a severance offer of 1 month's pay.
1 month's pay. So I have to ask. I mean, for many people, they would say, look, if you have a job, you're not a rugby player, you're a dude contracted to work sales or whatever have you, and you're going to be let go, or a business is going to declare bankruptcy and they offer you a severance. Some people are going to look at that and say, hey, the severance is a fair opportunity for the business to at least, take care of the employee. Why is it that, in your opinion and the opinion of your fellow players, that those contracted for 2026 are owed more than what that 1 month severance offer was made?
So in our contracts, we have full buyout clauses. So if we're to cease like working, like they have to fully buy us out, which they just kind of brushed by the wayside. And then even on a more realistic standpoint, like we get it, a team's folding, but you bought all these guys here from different parts of the country. They've moved their families. Like, you've got guys with their kids starting school. You've got, like, I've signed a long 12-month lease. Like, other guys that just have a lot of stuff going on, that they're here in this city to play rugby. 1 month is not a fair compensation for, like, especially with our like, we fulfilled our part of the contract, and they, in a way, aren't fulfilling theirs. So if we fulfilled our part of the contract, we should at least be negotiated with fairly.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're kind of answering it already, but why did the players attempt to get a better compensation package than what was offered? I mean, whether you talk about your situation and the challenges, you mentioned a lease that you had signed, a 12-month lease, you know, what were some of the other challenges that players have that were supposed to get paid for 2026 and now are not going to get paid for you know, that compensation for that contracted year?
Yeah, I would even just say, even guys who were like, okay, well, it's done, like, I want to leave, like, it costs money to move someplace different. But mostly just moving stuff, like work, family, school, a lot of reasons, okay.
All right. So have talks surrounding these attempts been optimistic, at least after that initial compensation offer?
I would say they've been non-existent. They've kind of just gone completely ghost on us.
So they sent, I mean, I got to ask this, have they sent you guys checks or, you know, they made the offer of compensation? Kind of what's the next step, if you will, or what would have been the next step?
Ideally, we'd like them to negotiate with us, the players, and then the union is helping us out in that. But yeah, ideally, we'd like to negotiate. But if they don't come to the table, we can't really do that. So everything's on the table right now, even legal matters are taken into the hands of the law. So everything's on the table.
Gotcha. So that's a great point to talk about this next piece. And for those of you who don't know, there is a U.S. Rugby Players Association, and there is now an MLR Players Association that's kind of a byproduct of it. So the U.S. USARPA, for those that don't know, represented the U.S. men's and women's Eagles, Sevens, and Fifteens teams. And what I think about a year and a half ago, the league recognized the MLR Players Association, which worked closely with USARPA. So, and tell me if I got any of that part wrong, Malcolm. I think I'm pretty spot on there, correct?
Yeah,
and just so. Okay. So at what point did the NOLA Gold players begin to work with the union to try to get fair compensation?
The union has done really well by us. They contacted us right away. And me and our players union rep Matt have been in close contact with them pretty much every step of the way.
Okay. Have the this ownership, have they responded at all to the union's interrogatories?
No, nothing.
Nothing. Okay, but the I assume, and I just want to make sure to answer any questions that fans may have, we can assume that the union has reached out to the new, to this ownership.
Yes, yes. Very, very okay. many times.
Okay. So ultimately, the NOLA players, in conjunction with USARPA, with the MLR Players Association, recently made this dispute public. I think that was about 2 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken. It was released on social media formats, not only a statement from the players, but also a similar statement that matched and married it from the union itself. Why did both these groups feel it was the necessary next step in the process?
I mean, it's kind of the last step before things become legal, but we just want them to come to the table to talk about a fair solution. That's pretty much all we can do.
Right. So I got to ask, I mean, putting it out on social media, what were you guys hoping to gain yourselves as players and the union that represents you? What were you hoping to gain out of that social media post? I mean, what was its intent or purpose?
I guess the intent is just to bring light on the fact that these teams, some of these teams, or I guess this ownership group in particular, are not treating the players right. And that in turn, I think, is not good for rugby in America and rugby in general. Like, we're trying to build professional leagues, professional teams, and if players aren't treated right, that's bad for everybody.
And by treated right, you're just talking about
opening up commitments of a contract.
Honoring commitments of contract, or at least, you know, keeping dialogue open about how to honor those contracts in the best way possible.
Yes.
Okay. Do you think there's anything that the league could have done differently as in its entirety to help prevent this, or is this something that is avoidable? I mean, and for fans that don't know, and I apologize, Malcolm, but let me just insert this. This is not the first time that we've had teams fold, right? The Giltinis folded, the Austin team folded, the Austin Gilgronis folded. We had the Toronto Arrows fold. We had, we know the Sharks folded more recently. Houston probably is the latest. Utah is the latest, but it's all come in succession. But this has happened in past years. So I guess, you know, going back to my question, Malcolm, is there anything that the league could have done maybe to, you know, head this off or at least address the concern moving forward?
That's a tough question for me to answer. I'm honestly not sure. I only know, like, okay. I think that if you make a contract, if teams make contracts with players, they should honor them. And I think the players should honor contracts as well. But as far as league, what they can do, your guess is as good as mine.
So, yeah, it's funny you say that. I one of my thoughts, and again, with a bit of hindsight, and I hate to, delve too deeply into this, but my own thoughts for fans that are watching. One of the things I think, and we're down to six teams at this point, and we hope, and we're all supportive. I'm a huge fan of the MLR. I hope it continues. I hope it, you know, after this reset and kind of finding its footing, it grows and continues to be a larger part of the rugby landscape in the United States. One of the things I would love to see the league do is kind of restructure how teams come into the league. So when a team's come into the league, they put up some form of capital in like a, a bank account, if you will. And that's kind of held there, an escrow, is probably the best way to describe it. And if a team, you know, each year that a team sticks around and meets markers about development and youth development and maybe an academy system, which the league has been keeping track of, each year that it does that, they get money back based upon meeting those metrics. So they get some of their investment that's in escrow back in return to them. But if they fold, then that money is kept. And that would be, in essence, the place where you would draw from to pay players fair compensation that has been negotiated under contract. And so I guess it's not fair for me to ask Malcolm that question.
That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea.
But I guess that's my thought, knowing that we've crossed this bridge before, right? And that, you know, as people talked about, you know, this is a growing league. It will contract. It will grow. So we've got to be prepared for the potential that it happens again. And what better way than to establish that ahead of time so that players, teams can have things operate smoothly and effectively. But that just hammers 2 cents. Take it for what it's worth. All right. So let's talk about this more specifically. We talked about some of your teammates. We've talked about unfortunately, the fans of New Orleans who, are feeling a big loss. I've talked to many of them recently, obviously very close to Dan and Sheila, who, are pillars of the community and are really going to feel the loss of having the gold there on a regular basis in the spring. But let's talk about you real quick. How has this situation affected your plans for next season? And I got to ask, are you exploring opportunities elsewhere?
I would say I don't think it's affected my plans for next season per se. It's affected my life a bit, but I will be playing next year.
In the MLR?
Yes, in the MLR.
Okay. All right, folks. I won't go too deeply on it. I won't press Malcolm here. But it looks like Malcolm and his adorable cat, which has a great ass, by the way, just you know. Anyway, adorable cat will be playing elsewhere in the MLR this year. We're excited to see it. And, you know, for personal reasons, I think you know where I hope Malcolm lands, but who knows what's going to happen. But maybe we'll hear something very shortly about his plans in the MLR for next season. So last couple of questions as we close this out. And again, I want to thank you for your time. I sincerely appreciate it. I know you're one of those vocal lads that is really concerned and wanted to make sure that lads get their fair compensation. What would you say to younger players that are entering the league? The MLR has made a pretty clear statement that they want more USA Foundation, more USA players. They've made a commitment to that with, you know, the Canadians being redefined as foreign players with, you know, a reduction from 10 to 7 foreign players on a game day roster. It's clear that they want young lads coming out of American college to be able to play in the league. What would you say to younger players entering the league about protecting themselves contractually?
Yeah, I would say I would tell them specifically to talk and have a rapport with the older players. I think that a lot of what I've learned in the league, I've learned from vets like Eric Howard, Kyle Bailey, like talk to the older guys on your team. Don't be afraid to ask questions and just don't go into anything blind.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. You were there before the union, much before the union. Hell, you were there before there was even a college draft. I mean, you and Feeksy were signed as free agents. So even before, and your buddy from Penn State, a good friend of the Rugby Rant, Robert Remescu, hope he's doing well over in Romania. But, you know, you guys signed as free agents, but you've also now seen the players have a representation, have a union be established. Like, I guess my question is about the union. Has a union been a beneficial part of players and players' lives and helping, you know, players move forward in just in terms of fair compensation and wages?
Absolutely. In terms of fair compensation, like in terms of just skill building, like helping guys like find jobs, like they've been great. It's like, it's the weird thing is we've been kind of spoiled back when, you know, Tim Falcon was our owner. We never really had to think about whether we're going to be taken care of well. And we just were, but especially now, like the union's been great for us.
Yeah. It's got, so, I mean, under when Tim was a principal owner, you know, Fitz and Tim and other people in the rugby community really looked for players to get opportunities in the off season and find, you know, like what you're doing with the crew. And you talked about some of the other players that are coaching and, you know, still developing their skill set beyond, you know, their playing years. That was something that was done. And now the unions had to take that, some of that responsibility.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, Malcolm, anything in closing that, you know, you want to say that maybe we haven't covered about this process, anything you want to tell the fans about, you know, what's coming in 2026, or, you know, what they can do to help support the league and help rugby grow in America?
I guess just to the NOLA fans, just let them know how much we appreciate you guys. Like, every single year I've been here, the fan base has grown and grown and grown. And we felt the support on the field and off the field. And you made this place feel like home for a lot of the guys. So just thank you to the NOLA fans. And then as far as growing the game, just join your local rugby club, support your local rugby club, go see a game whenever you can.
Yeah. I'd like to echo two things there. The first is, you know, I know that there was a thank you that players were invited to with fans. It was at a bar, and I had it written down. I forgot to bring that note with me, but I assume that there was a lot of opportunity to console one another and to celebrate one another and, you know, appreciate that symbiotic relationship that in the MLR that fans have with players and players with fans.
Yep, definitely. It was a good night. Did a little karaoke one time.
Nice. What's your go-to song, by the way?
Overkill by Men at Work.
Oh, nice. I like that. There's a lot of Men at Work and you know, like Down Under type songs that we're playing in the Gold Locker Room, I think. I've heard of a few other
Men at Work songs. That Australia effect.
His spirit lived on. That's awesome. The other thing I'd like to echo, and this is something Malcolm touched upon, folks, you know, if we're going to be ready for 2031, it's going to take yeoman's work, but it's going to take everybody's effort. And even if you haven't played rugby, but you love this sport, you love the game, you love the personalities, guys like Malcolm May, and I know there's a lot of Chicago fans up here that really love yourself some Luke White, love yourself some Julian Dominguez, love yourself some Noah Brown, some Peyton Wall. Even if you haven't played, there are a lot of clubs out there that need administration work, that need a social media campaign, that need somebody to go out and help them raise sponsorship dollars, that need to, you know, get jerseys designed and help run the kit and merchandising and things like that. And so lend your professional acumen to your local rugby club. Even better yet, to your local youth rugby club. If we're going to be successful in 7 years' time, it's going to take an effort from youth rugby on up. And that's something that Malcolm's doing as a coach, helping support men's club rugby there. But it's something you can do too. And again, there are opportunities, a playoff match down there for the Markel Cup between the crew and the Coyotes? No, Baton Rouge. But also up here in the Midwest, there's a huge event going on at the Chicago Blaze. Come, you know, I think you pay to park. It's free to get in, but they'll take your money at the bar all day long and twice on Sunday or Saturday, as this case. And that helps raise funds to support local rugby, raise funds to support the Midwest Rugby Union. So get involved, folks. Do your part. Help us out. Help guys like Malcolm out. If he can just focus on coaching like he can in the crew, because Danimal's back there working behind the scenes, always selling sponsorships, always working on support of the boys, it makes a load of difference in the lives of these rugby players. So, Malcolm, I want to first thank you so much for what you are doing for the rugby community, not just as a player, as a coach, but I also want to thank you for joining the show and at least talking about the player's position from the NOLA Gold and what's happening in terms of the drive for fair and reasonable compensation.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having us and giving us a voice. Me and the boys appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, mate. Always a pleasure. And I wish you well wherever you land in the 2026 season. And if you happen to be coming to Dogtown to play, you know, from wherever you're playing from, I can't wait to see you and to, you know, thank you for all that you do in person. You know, I may ask you to sign a piece of memorabilia or whatnot, just cause that's the way I roll. So anyway, thanks again, mate. I appreciate it. Folks, just to let you know, this is, we're going to continue the conversations with folks in the league. I've got a personal series that will be starting up here in December, and that's where I'm going to get together with all the GMs, with all this turmoil, with all the change, with the shift in the focus of the league. I want to talk to GMs and get some perspective on how they've had to adapt and adjust in their job to, you know, making their rosters and shaping their rosters as we have now contracted to six teams, but also as we see foreign players redefined, Canadians being foreign players, smaller numbers of foreign players on game day rosters. How are they negotiating and managing these new adjustments to the league? Because it is a challenge, but I think a lot of fans are curious to see the different takes and approaches that these GMs have. So join me. I've got them on the docket. I've got him in, locked and loaded, ready to go. Will Maggie's going to be joining us. TK, Tom Kindley from New England. Got them all locked and loaded. So join us in the Rugby Rant as we approach the 2026. Malcolm, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to whichever club you're joining. And again, it'll be great to catch up with you if you find yourself back in Dogtown. Thanks again, fans. And keep coming back to the Rugby Rant, where we aim to grow rugby one fan at a time. Cheers.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.